The best way to make it through with hearts and wrists intact is to realize 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Ain't bad. That's Fall Out Boy. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. Hope you all had a nice weekend. The Blue Jays continued to play pretty good baseball. Couldn't come up with the sweep. Once again, though, they have now won 2 of 3 in 4 consecutive series, including back-to-back series where they couldn't pull the sweep off. I joke a little bit about trying to stay sane by realizing 2 out of 3 ain't bad. You'd win 104 games or 108 games over the course of a baseball season, you'd be in a pretty good position. But given the particulars of Sunday's game, I would completely understand if you didn't feel that great about 2 out of 3, about 2 out of 3 the last time, even about 8 out of 12, because look, 4 series in a row that you've won, that's objectively a good thing. There's no question there. The AL East is already 22 games in here, a juggernaut. 12-10 has the Blue Jays in fourth, does have them in a playoff position if the season ended today. But this is a division that as a group has like a 600 winning percentage right now. You are going to regret the ones you couldn't come up with, the sweeps that just slipped through your fingers. You'll be all right, though. Good baseball for the Blue Jays on Friday and Saturday. Pretty bad baseball for the Blue Jays on Sunday. We will talk to Julia Kreutz of MLB.com about it in a minute here. She was also on Jays Talk postgame with Sho Ali all weekend. Ann Rogers of Royals.com is going to join us a little later to tee up this 4-game set that gets going tonight at 7:40 at the K at Kauffman, where, by the way, if you missed it on the weekend, Baltimore Orioles outfielder Colton Cowser caught the final out of a game and just threw the ball behind him into the crowd, lands in the fountains. Turns out Craig Kimbrell wanted that ball. He had tied Billy Wagner for 7th all time on the saves list. Not exactly a milestone to me, but still funny that a guy yeeted the ball into the fountain and they had to go and retrieve it. Kenley Jansen also moved into 5th all time in saves on the weekend. There was a lot of fun random stuff around baseball on the weekend, and I know it's the start of NBA playoffs. The Leafs are down 1-0 in their series. Shocker. I'm going to melt down nice and early in the playoffs this year. This is great. There was some interesting baseball stuff as well. And if you're upset about the Blue Jays, at least you didn't have a walk-off home run negated by fan interference like the Colorado Rockies did. They'd go on to win that game anyway. All I'll say to that one is if you are a fan and you interfere with a catchable ball and you get called for fan interference, you've got to make the play. You've got to make the catch. You can't drop the ball as well. Jays didn't have anything like that. Couple updates before we talk to Julia. If you weren't in the loop on the weekend, Mitch White has been traded, sold really, but traded to the San Francisco Giants for cash considerations in terms of pitching depth down the minors. Alek Manoah had a better start Friday with the Buffalo Bisons. He had a really rough first inning, gave up a single, a double, a homer, challenged a ball that was way off the plate, trying to take advantage of that new challenge system. He did not win that challenge, but he ends up going 5 2/3 with only 2 earned runs, and nobody walked is probably the most important thing there. More notable than Alek Manoah in those games, though, was that Aroldis Martinez continued being the hottest hitter in minor league baseball and the Statcast king of minor league baseball. He had 5 home runs over a 5-game stretch. His OPS is well north of 1,000 right now. That is also true for Addison Barger and for outfielder Will Robertson down there. So a nice little start for the Buffalo Bisons. If you're looking at those Aroldis numbers and thinking, hey, why isn't he up yet? I mean, it's early for this. They're going to give him some chances. They're going to make sure pitchers can't find more holes in his swings. His whiff rate's still, you know, fairly high, although the strikeout rate has come down noticeably. He's still learning second base. You don't need to rush a younger prospect there, especially without a direct path to playing time. However, over the course of 162, whether you're looking ahead to the trade deadline, whether you're looking ahead to if someone cools off, if someone gets hurt, if someone's performance just isn't there, it's obviously objectively a very, very good thing to have some guys cooking down at AAA. Less so on the pitching side, where, by the way, Nate Pearson got called up over the weekend because Chad Green has been put on the IL with a right teres strain. Nate Pearson did not have the best of outings yesterday. Nobody on the Blue Jays really had the best of outings yesterday because the entire team is dealing with the same sinus infection that I have been dealing with. Thanks for giving that to me, Toronto Blue Jays. Someone who was in fine form over the weekend, though, was Julia Kreutz. She was on Jays Talk postgame with Sho Ali all weekend. She joins us now. Julia, how are you?
I wouldn't say fine form, Blake. I was also dealing with some situations there in terms of sinus and throat infection. I don't know what is happening in Toronto right now, but it's a problem. And we're seeing that with the Blue Jays as well. When professional athletes cannot escape it. Who are we, right, to try to fight it?
Yeah, I'm a mere mortal. I'm a normal person with a normal immune system. Without MLB resources, without an MLB player's finely tuned body, I've got nothing. Hey, at least I couldn't tell that you were dealing with anything on the Jays talks after the game. So you hit it very well. For anyone who didn't catch it, Chris Bassitt revealed after the game that he was really not feeling well during yesterday's game. He estimated about 20 of the Blue Jays are dealing with a bad sinus infection that's been going around. That's obviously not going to make anyone feel better on the fan side. And they did play a couple of good baseball games there. But Julia, you said it before Jays talk yesterday. They didn't exactly stick the landing on this series, and that's happened a couple series in a row. What do you attribute that to yesterday? It was a bit of a they kind of really did kind of try to hand it to the Padres in a few different ways.
Yeah, it can get frustrating, right, Blake, when the Blue Jays sort of build up these series wins and then the sweep seems to elude them. It's happened a couple of times now, and you're starting to see fans get a little frustrated about that too, and maybe point that out a little bit. When is it that the Blue Jays are going to get a sweep? I obviously think that, you know, dealing with illness is not fun in any way, shape, or form. When you have an entire team dealing with that, it really piles up and it's going to pose some challenges. Yesterday, it was a little bit of what we have seen recently from the Blue Jays, in that the inability to get something past, say, one big inning offensively tends to come back to bite them. So obviously the Blue Jays were earlier in the season or in the series were super able to find and string together those big hits, put together those big innings and hold on to leads. But when they are not able to do that, asking the pitching staff to be perfect is a pretty tall ask. And it's not going to happen every single time, especially when Chris Bassitt is not at his best. And then the relievers that come in and Trevor Richards and Nate Pearson are struggling mightily with command. We saw both of them really, really struggle to find the strike zone and to throw their best pitches for strikes in certain situation, walking in runs and all of that. That is not obviously what you want to see out of your relievers. We understand that yesterday the bullpen was thin due to usage in prior games. But when that happens, the offense needs to step up. And they just were unable to do that yesterday, Blake. So a little bit of the things that have plagued the Blue Jays early on in this series, paired with some uncharacteristic problems when it comes to the pitching staff.
Yeah, on the hitting side, you know, it was one of those games where, hey, you can't struggle to hit with runners in scoring position if you don't have runners in scoring position all game. It wasn't until late in the game that the Jays had anyone pass first base. A couple of solo home runs, of course, for David Schneider and Ernie Clement. But really nothing going. The one time they did have maybe something going, Bo Bichette runs into an out on, I guess, a caught stealing, a pickoff. I don't know exactly how we score that one where you take off and the pitcher hasn't thrown the ball yet. And that was, you know, obviously not everyone, nobody was at their sharpest. And you mentioned it. Hey, the offense has to pick you up on a day like that when the pitching staff doesn't have it. It was also a day where the Blue Jays, and they've done a much better job of this so far this year than last year, but it wasn't a good little things day for the Blue Jays. Bo Bichette gets out on the bases there. They grounded into a couple double plays. George Springer opens the game with the ball in right field that goes under his glove. Even Danny Jansen gets a catcher interference call in that tough Trevor Richards inning where Richards would have been dealing with a little less trouble there if that hadn't happened. So a bit of a little things day. Given that they've been much better for those things, you willing to chalk it up to a kind of one-off, nobody's at their best today kind of thing?
Yeah, it was uncharacteristic. It was completely not what we have come to expect out of this team, because this is a team that since last year has put a ton of emphasis in paying attention to details and coming in and really playing the fundamental baseball. And we are seeing also that this year, even extrapolating sort of the mentality that they had in 2023. And when you look at that, at those two specific situations that you brought up with Bichette and Springer, we know that Springer was one of the guys that were dealing with a little bit of an illness. And when that ball escapes or eludes his glove, it just seems so completely off character and something that you just don't come to expect from any major league outfielder, let alone a guy that has, you know, proved himself as much as as Springer has, and he's been serviceable in the outfield this year. No one is going to say that, you know, he's one of the best in the league by any means, but he is not embarrassing himself out there. And when he does something like that, you kind of have to look and say, okay, there's clearly something else going on that is preventing him from playing the sound brand of baseball that the Blue Jays have preached. So I am very willing to chalk that up to just a bad day at the ballpark or at the office or however you want to put it. But the Blue Jays are going to have to find ways to take those winnable games in a very, very competitive division that they're playing in. Yesterday was a winnable game, Blake. That is the reality of the situation. And then things happen and just developed in a certain way that they couldn't get out of the hole. And let's not forget that in that top of the ninth, they also had some chances that kind of went nowhere. And another baffling situation there was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. just staring at that 100-mile-an-hour pitch right in the middle of the zone. Maybe he was looking for something else. Maybe he, you know, just wasn't ready for it. Again, so many of the little things just did not go the Blue Jays' way yesterday.
Yeah. I want to circle back to Vlad because he had two multi-hit games, and I came away feeling like it was a bad weekend still, which is kind of just where the bar is with Vlad these days, I think. You mentioned with George Springer, bad day at the office or bad day at the park. Next work from Dome game, by the way, is May 1st, 3:00 afternoon start. Get your tickets, et cetera, et cetera. Got to get those plugs in where we can. Julia, so we can understand, you know, maybe some of the base running stuff, maybe some of the defensive stuff, we'll circle back to the Vlad thing. Bo getting thrown out in that situation, again, obviously it's a mistake. This is a team that last year made a lot of base running mistakes. And in my estimation, in an effort to kind of curb that, they were behind the MLB trend of doing a little bit more on the bases, right? They didn't steal as many bases as other teams were. They have some guys like a Dalton Varsho, of course, who's going to go first to third or second to home every single time, but they generally weren't a great base running team. Is that so? I could see people looking at that Bo Bichette one two different ways. And one is that, well, that's an okay mistake because they're trying to be a little bit more aggressive. They want to make a little bit more happen. That was a game where they were getting nothing done at the plate. So the value of that 90 feet is maybe bigger. But I could also see someone being like, well, you guys just spent a whole year getting embarrassed on the base paths over and over, including in a huge spot in the playoffs. How have you not sharpened this edge or rounded this edge out? How do you feel about their base running in general right now, and what a play like that maybe signifies?
I still feel like they're a little bit behind, Blake, when it comes to where the league is and just the trends that we have seen, especially with disengagement rules and all of that. It's rare that you would see guys get thrown out, especially when it comes in maybe a little bit of even an embarrassing way, like it was with Bo. It kind of harkens back to last year, you know, that wild card series when Bo kind of tries to round third and come home. And that was not a good decision, as we remember. And he was kind of salty about it after the game. And we know that this is a skill that Bo possesses. He has been a talented base stealer and a successful one in the past, but we have also seen it regress a little bit. And that was something that I kind of pointed out earlier in the year. If Bo can go back to being the base runner that he was, especially in the minor leagues, he's athletic enough to do it for sure, then that is what will put his game at a different level here. And maybe, you know, get a little bit more momentum when it comes to things like AL MVP votes and stuff like that. I do believe that that is one aspect of his game that was maybe forgotten a little bit, but he has it in him. And so when you look at him trying to make things happen in the base paths, I don't think anyone can be super upset about that. But when he gets jumpy like he did yesterday, that is when you need to take a look at the grand scheme of things and say, okay, what is it that you were trying to accomplish there? Does it fit with our game plan? And how can you do better next time? I am completely okay with a guy like Varsho, you know, stealing second the game before with Alejandro Kirk at the plate, because we know that Kirk has had some quite a few grounded into double plays recently. He's not really consistently putting the ball in the air. And so the situation kind of asks for Varsho to just take off And he's just so locked in right now that you can basically tell him to do whatever he wants and he'll probably succeed. And that's awesome. But Bichette is also a guy that has that level of or that ability to make things happen. It's just it's a little odd when the decisions look, at least from the outside, as boneheaded as they did yesterday.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And you made a great point about Bo, about how he does have that track record. In 2021, he went 25 for 26 stealing bases. He's 21 for 33 over the three seasons since. So the volume has certainly fallen off, as has the effectiveness. The other thing that plagued the Blue Jays yesterday, and who knows, maybe if the offense is putting a few more runs on the board, they manage the bullpen differently, or pitching with the lead is more comfortable, or they go to a higher leverage arm. They did give up six runs. Not the worst outcome, considering they walked nine guys. So we talked about Chris Bassitt really wasn't feeling well. Trevor Richards got squeezed a couple times, and then there was the Danny Jansen catcher interference. I'm willing to, you know, obviously you'd prefer Trevor Richards to get rid of those inherited runners, but I'm more willing to understand what happened to him out there. Nate Pearson, though, that was a guy we saw be pretty good before he got optioned down to the minors. He had thrown six plus innings of shutout ball, you know, was hitting 102, wasn't controlling it the best when it got to 102, but 102 is 102. And then yesterday he was all over the place, looked a little frustrated with himself. What did you make of Pearson's outing? And, you know, is there something maybe to, hey, getting optioned down, even if you understand the option game, that can disrupt the guy's flow a little bit, maybe even his confidence?
Yeah, Blake, I don't know about that, to be honest with you, because Pearson has had his flow disrupted so many times in his career, right? When you talk about not only injuries, but then changing his role, going from starter to reliever, and then all of a sudden the Blue Jays are asking him to be sort of a length guy. And so he is, you know, getting the up downs, as pitchers like to refer to it. He comes in, he doesn't know when he's coming in, he pitches an inning, he sits in the dugout, he comes back out. So there's been so much of that. And when you talk to him, you sort of get the impression that he understands it and he is okay with whatever it is that the Blue Jays are asking of him. He will be very, very honest in saying, hey, listen, the up downs as a reliever are, you know, one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, because I don't know when I'm coming in and I don't know how much they're going to ask me to pitch. But that is the sort of the upside of having had so many setbacks in his career, right? You kind of learn to deal with the frustrations, you learn to deal with the disruptions and not let that get you. But with Pearson yesterday, I think that the situation was maybe a little bit more of, this was a new one for him, at least this year. Inherited runners, a guy at first base, a very, very close game, so a more high leverage situation. And you could see that he was trying to press. He was trying to get to the plate too quickly. He was overly worried about that runner at first base. And that is not going to bode well for your command, especially for a guy that throws as hard as Pearson did. So I'm not sure if the optioning does anything to his flow at this point, because he has just been through so much. But it was a new situation and it was an opportunity. And I do think that maybe the pressure of the moment got to him a little bit. And an inability to adjust to the game situation may have played a factor as well.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. It's great context on Nate the Dude and having talked to him over the years. And yeah, this is the, like you said, it's the one benefit of having gone through a bunch of stuff is, yeah, so I had to get a flight from Columbus to San Diego and be ready to pitch. What's the big deal? So Nate Pearson was back up because Chad Green hit the IL. He had been optioned previously when Romano and Swanson came back, in a move that also saw Mitch White get DFA'd. Mitch White was traded to San Francisco for cash on the weekend. Favorite moment from the Mitch White era? Do we want to pour one out here?
Honestly, I wouldn't be able to pick a moment, but I will say this. I saw quite a bit of White in spring training, and he looked really good. He looked like he was doing all the right things, and we spoke a little bit about the uptick in velocity, but what surprised me the most was that the breaking ball seemed to be there. Like, he seemed to be sort of putting together a healthy offseason and able to work on things a little bit more consistently than he did last year. And he was off to a pretty good start with the Blue Jays. He was a valuable length guy out of that bullpen. And he also provided the Blue Jays with some additional depth in the rotation should something happen. And as we have seen, it is it's not no guarantee that it won't. It's a long baseball season, and with a guy like Kevin Gausman struggling a little bit, also a disrupted off season, you don't know what you're going to get from Alek Manoah. You don't know if Yariel Rodriguez can maintain the level of dominance that we have seen from him so far, although I'm pretty in on the Yariel Rodriguez bandwagon here. And now the Blue Jays pitching depth all of a sudden looks a lot different, and getting rid of Mitch White is a pretty big part of that. You know, you kind of wish for success for the guy, and you hope that he will get some more consistent opportunities with the Giants. But the Blue Jays are going to probably need to reassess their pitching depth after certain moves that they have made.
Yeah, and look, Alek Manoah on the comeback trail-ish, but we're going to need to see a lot more before anyone is super confident there. And then Yariel Rodriguez being up, you know, implicitly changes your starting pitching depth because Bowden Francis is now back in the bullpen in a piggyback role, a multi-inning guy. I'm as in on the Yariel experience as you are. Given the way we saw them use Bowden the other night, so he comes in for the fifth and the sixth, and they started to let him get the seventh, but once it got to a lefty, he was coming out of there. If he's going to go two innings behind Yariel, is that, like, do you think they need to start considering using him in other, like, the inflexibility that it gives your bullpen to have a guy who is strictly being saved for every fifth day behind Yariel is a little limiting, right?
Yeah, I would say so. And I would say that if the Blue Jays want to use Francis in different situations, then two innings is probably the most that you're going to get out of him when he is piggybacking with Yariel Rodriguez. I understand that there needs to be a concern with managing Rodriguez's innings right now and his pitch count and all of that, because this is a guy that sat out the entire 2023 season. He did not pitch professionally, and so you need to be careful with that. At the same time, you heard him say after his last start that he felt strong, that he felt like he could have gone a little bit farther in the game. Of course, pitchers are going to say that. They always want to go back out there. You understand that it's part of the gig. But having a guy that is as honest and upfront about that as Rodriguez was not only shows hunger, but it also shows that there may be another gear and the Blue Jays may be able to count on him for a little more length in the future. I don't mind what the Blue Jays are doing right now with Rodriguez and Francis, but if they do want, and listen, Francis has the ability to be very, very dominant out of the pen too. We saw it certainly last year. And we know that he has the weapons to do it in his repertoire. And when you're looking at, say, a game like yesterday, when Bassett does not give you the length that he usually does, yes, the game was close, and there were so many question marks that were around that game until it kind of got away from the Blue Jays. But you need to at least consider the possibility: can we get one plus good innings out of Francis in a situation when maybe a different starter from Rodriguez doesn't give you what you were looking for? I think that he should be an option that the Blue Jays look at, because this is obviously a guy that they are putting some stock in. They are investing in him and believing in him in different ways so far this season. So the bullpen is better with Francis available to them more often.
And look, if you're going to trust the guy kind of makeup-wise and preparation-wise to bounce around roles, your piece at BlueJays.com on Bowden Francis back at the end of March, Blue Jays' newest starter delivers calm amid chaos, a nice look into the psyche of Bowden Francis. And I've talked to him a few times. I think everyone gets that kind of instant impression from him. He's built for bouncing around and getting his role changed. And, hey, we need you to be comfortable being uncomfortable. That seems like the right guy for it. Couple of quick ones here before I let you go. So David Schneider homers yesterday. We see him dance a little bit in the dugout. Now, this is a radio first show. There is a TV component, but we're not going to go into too much detail on the visual of that. But we need to get him some help in that regard, right?
Yes. I got to say, I'm not the person to look at for help. I know I'm Brazilian, but as I put it yesterday, that is how I look when I'm dancing in front of other Brazilians. My wedding was a disaster. I'll just tell you that, because I just felt so embarrassed. But yeah, he's definitely a better hitter than he is a dugout dancer, Blake. But you know what? you have to applaud a guy for just being 100% himself and authentic, and you got to celebrate, right?
Yeah.
When you hit a shot like that, you have to celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. The Buffalo Boys both coming through in that one. David Schneider and Ernie Clement both with solo home runs in that one. What do you make of it is they're good players and they had good seasons at AAA last year. Matt Hagg, obviously the hitting coach, comes up with them. But they have, like, given their roles, disproportionately contributed offensively so far. And yesterday, you know, probably the most encouraging thing about either of those was Ernie Clement's ability to come up in the zone and take one out when Joe Musgrove's pounding him down. He lets one sail and he jumps all over it. Those guys, I know there are only so many reps, there are only so many spots, but those guys making a case to you for a little bit more share of the playing time?
100%, Blake. I am a huge proponent of that. I do believe that the Blue Jays should be playing those guys as often as possible, because Schneider, maybe not the most electric start to the season. And I think we're always going to look at him and remember what he did last year when he came up, and he's probably going to fall short for the rest of his career of something like that. But he represents the power potential that the Blue Jays are missing right now, especially when you look at the top of that order that should be providing them with a little bit more power and isn't. Justin Turner certainly struggling over the past few games, and he was the biggest contributor earlier on in the season. And then when you have a guy like Davis Schneider who is able and willing to punish pitchers for their mistakes, which that is what he hit yesterday. Musgrove was trying to elevate that fastball, which is something that Schneider struggles with, but leaves it over the plate. And Schneider is not going to miss that way more often than not. And then with Clement, it's kind of, you know, you talk about his contact ability over and over again. The fact that he swung and missed twice or three times all through spring training, which is just ridiculous. And then you find out that there is another gear. There is more that he can do with a chin-high pitch there that he just sends in for a home run. Really, really impressive stuff. And when you have guys like that that are not only contributing, but they are legitimately putting in the work, happy to be there, and representing that jolt of energy that this team kind of desperately needs, even though it's pretty early in the season, you have to play them as much as you can.
Yeah, good lesson in that. Hey, over the course of the year, you're going to need something from all 26, certainly all 13 on the position player side. And the Jays haven't gotten a ton from their bench the last couple of years. So nice to see a change there. Nice to see you, Julia. Thank you for taking the time out this morning. Keep up all the great work.
Me too. Thank you so much. I've missed doing this with you, and I hope we can do it all season long.
I will be bugging you plenty, Julia. Thanks.
Thanks.
Julia Kreutz of MLB.com, of Sportsnet as well, doing some Jays talk for us with Sho Ali on the weekends. Should mention as well, it was another very good weekend for Dalton Varsho. He had an incredible catch in Friday's game and Saturday's game. He hit a big three-run home run in the first inning, stole a base a little bit later. He's found a really nice groove here. We talked a lot about the swing side of things last week, and I'm sure we'll continue to do that if he keeps hitting home runs. But yeah, nice to see the running on the bases going a little bit now that he's getting on base again. And always, always very nice to see the defense. It's pretty incredible to watch him out there in left field. We didn't get too deep into the Vlad stuff. It was a bit of an odd weekend for him. Two hits Friday, two hits Saturday, but a very rough Sunday. Feeling of, you know, certainly some missed opportunities, some missed meatballs that probably should have been jumped on, maybe could have made a difference there as Vlad continues to kind of just be a guy, you know, and I don't mean that in a complimentary way. He's been a little above league average from an OPS perspective. But when you play first base and you don't add much on the bases, that is not a great stat line to have. And it is early-ish, but some of the same issues we saw last year are around right now. So we will continue to monitor that. Chris Black's on with us tomorrow for the whole hour. I'm sure we'll go a little deeper on that. I'm guest hosting Blair and Barker tomorrow. Very excited to talk to Kevin Barker more mechanically, what he's seeing, approach-wise, what he's seeing with Vlad. So we didn't get time for that today, but we will over the course of the week. Right now, we're going to take a break. I'm going to learn about a Kansas City Royals team that is off to a pretty good start. They have played the Chicago White Sox, who are 3-18, 7 or 8 times already. So maybe that's what's going on here, but they have a plus 38 run differential already. That's one of the best marks in baseball. This is a team with some exciting young pitchers. They added a couple of those innings eating type of vets to solidify the rotation. And this is a team that late last year, some of their prospects really started to heat up. And you could have looked at that and been like, yeah, maybe it's September baseball. You face the worst pitchers. You know, that's more of a relic from when rosters expanded to 40 instead of when they expanded to 28. But still, some people hand wave that away. Yeah, it's the end of the season, whatever. They have a couple of young players who are off to really nice starts to the season here as hitters, as pitchers. We'll take a break. We'll talk to Ann Rogers of Royals.com about it as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's the Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Three against the Padres on the weekend. Four times in a row now they've taken two of three in a series. You cannot do that against the Kansas City Royals, not because you're not capable of winning two of three against them, but because it's a four-game series. So someone is going to win 3-1 or 4-0, or there would be a 2-2 split. The Royals lost two of three to the Orioles on the weekend. It was the first time they'd lost to Kauffman all season long. Still a very, very strong start for them overall. They're 13-9. They have a very strong plus 38 run differential. Let's get to know the Royals a little bit better. Let's talk to Annie Rogers of Royals.com, of MLB.com. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am excellent. So eventful weekend for you guys in this Orioles-Royals series. I know they almost completed that comeback from down 7-0 early on Saturday. You know, maybe less so yesterday. Where did the Royals kind of find themselves? Like I'd imagine for a young team that comes into this series 12-7 on a nice high, you play the Orioles, who are very, very good and maybe were in the position you think you're in 2 years ago, and you want to kind of measure yourself up against that Orioles team. Was that kind of the attitude of the Royals, and how did they come out of this weekend feeling?
Yeah, that's exactly it. They were frustrated afterwards. This is the series that you want to take. You want to win 2 of 3, not lose 2 of 3. And I think they showed a lot of fight on Saturday. You mentioned coming back from the 7-run deficit, but yesterday they kind of went quietly, and there's some questions with their offense. So they're definitely frustrated, but they can't really dwell on it because they've got the Blue Jays coming to town, and it's another big test. So I think there's a long stretch here of big tests for the Royals, and they can't really dwell too much on what has happened, and now they've got to move on to what's going to happen today.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's good. They started the season with a series loss to the Orioles there as well. There's no shame in that. The Orioles are very, very good. They won a ton of games last year. I do wonder, though, when you look at that, you know, if we take their season so far and it's bookended by a couple losses to the Orioles, in between there, yes, they're 13-9 overall. They went 6-1 against the White Sox, who might end up being like a historically bad team. When you're looking at where this team's at, how much does that weigh in for you that, look, they play in the AL Central. You got to play those teams, you know, they're your 12, 13 games against divisional opponents. But they have gotten a lot of the White Sox early. Is that a little bit of an asterisk for you?
Yeah, I think a little bit, knowing that good teams need to beat up on bad teams. They need to, that needs to happen. They needed to go 6-1 or even better. They could have gotten 7-0, honestly. So that needs to happen. But then you look at what happened against the Orioles, and the, you know, there's questions about the bullpen. Like I mentioned, a couple of offensive questions too. And those are kind of what you look at when you start to evaluate the beginning of the Royals season. So there's definitely things that need to go right still. They're not where they want to be in terms of, you know, winning those litmus tests, I guess you could say. And they've got a ton of them here coming up. They play the Blue Jays, obviously, twice in the next 2 weeks. And they play Milwaukee. They play the Rangers. So there's a lot of good teams coming up. And that's, at the end of this stretch, that's kind of how we'll know what team the Royals are. What are they going to do this season?
And at the very least, you know, even if they cool off record-wise or something like that, you have to be encouraged by what a lot of the players have been able to do individually, right? Because you can beat the White Sox as a team, but guys still have to get those hits. Guys still have to get those strikeouts. Guys still have to execute. And, hey, those are mostly major leaguers over on the south side. So they're I would imagine, given the way last year ended, too, where some of these guys individually were starting to turn a corner, it's a pretty encouraging start at the player-by-player-by-level, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at what Bobby Witt Jr. was able to do last year. He's gotten off to a really hot start this year, getting Vinny Pasquantino back and hitting again finally in the last 10 days or so has been really nice for the Royals. So you kind of see the pieces, and now it's just putting it all together. The rotation has been outstanding early on, and now that's all about sustainability. How long can they sustain it, and how well can their offense pick them up? So there's definitely individual pieces. There's a lot of questions too individually, and then it's all about just bringing it all together. So I'm really interested. I think it's going to be a fun series this week at Kauffman Stadium against the Royals and Blue Jays.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm looking forward to it. Don't get to be there, but it's one of my favorite ballparks in baseball, which I'm a little envious that you get to spend so much time there. I know you're a Missouri person originally, but yeah, it seems like it would be a fun place to go every day. Tonight, we're going to see Brady Singer on the mound. He's off to a nice start here. Again, two of his four starts against the White Sox, but you still got to execute. You still got to deliver in those spots. And both his sinker and his slider have looked really, really good. What's gone into the strong start for Singer? It looks like the Royals have a nice little 1-2 here at the top of the rotation brewing with him and Alec Marsh.
Yeah, absolutely. The big thing with Brady is adding a four-seam fastball and a sweeper this year. So that's really expanded his arsenal. It's covering more parts of the zone. He's not just a two-pitch starter anymore, which is really hard to do, and we've seen him struggle with that. So the four-seam has been really helpful in covering the top part of the zone, and then the sweeper is getting a lot of chase on it. So that's been the key. He's not had as much velocity on his sinker, which is concerning, and it'll be interesting to see how that he fares tonight against a better lineup than the White Sox, as you mentioned. Two of four of his starts have been against Chicago. So this is another big test for him. He's coming off he struggled last year, and he ended the year on the injured list. So this is a big year for him, and the Royals are counting on him. And Alec Marsh, as you said, Cole Reagan's their young guys to really help this rotation this year.
On the Alec Marsh side, we'll see him later in the series. You wrote a great piece at Royals.com about him being the second fastest Royal after Brady Singer to 100 strikeouts, just 21 appearances. But the thing that's, obviously the stuff is there to strike guys out. He strikes out more than 9 per 9 over his career so far. But the walk rate is down significantly. And when you talk to him about, quote, slowing the game down, how much of that do you think has helped him with those moments of poor control that have plagued him in the past?
Yeah, the biggest thing with Marsh has been his inefficiency. He's spraying the ball. It's hard for him to get in the zone early on in his career, especially last year in his rookie season. This year, he came to spring training completely different. I mean, he was more confident. He was more composed on the mound. We all know he has the stuff. He sits in the upper 90s. He's got the swing and miss on his secondary pitches. He's got great stuff, and it was just about getting it in the zone. So his composure and his confidence and his efficiency in the zone, that's what won him that fifth starter spot over Jordan Lyles this spring, and that was a big deal for the Royals to have that competition, and then to have the young guy win the competition. So for him, it is all about being efficient, not laboring through a lot of at-bats like he did last year. That's been the key for him this year. We'll be really interested again against a better lineup with the Blue Jays. Very interested to see how he attacks them. But it's been really good to see him make those changes and slow the game down in the sense that he's taking more time. He works really fast, so he's taking more time and breathing, and that's helped him just be in the zone way more.
there's this interesting dynamic. You mentioned the competition for that final spot between Jordan Lyles and Alec Marsh. There's this interesting dynamic, too, where they come into camp with three young starters in Marsh, Raggins, and Singer, and then three kind of veteran old heads in Lugo, Waka, and Lyles. And I'd imagine, in addition to the competition, the idea is that these guys in their 30s, yeah, you got to eat innings. We all have 162 games to get through, but there could be some good teaching potential there, given that Lugo, Waka, and Lyles have all, you know, bounced around a little bit, been in different roles and things like that. Are you starting to see that? Was that part of the Royals' plan here with mixing, hey, we got a bunch of younger guys, but we're going to supplement them with I don't want to say journeymen, that's a little too negative about them, but with vets who have bounced around a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what we saw with Lugo and Waka and the signings. Yes, they wanted to bring in strike throwers. They wanted to bring in good starters. But really, they wanted to bring in leadership and a veteran presence. And that's what it's gone exactly how they have wanted it to go. And as far as the clubhouse presence that Lugo and Waka bring, the dugout presence, you know, a couple weeks ago, I wrote about just how, you know, after every start, starters gather in the dugout and they go over the start that just happened while the game is still going on. They evaluate it, and the young guys, Singer, Reagans, and Marsh, they're learning so much from those debriefs, I guess you can call them. And that's been big. You know, that's a huge thing for the Royals. They haven't had really that veteran presence as much over the last couple of years. They've relied a lot on their young guys. So to have those two who have really embraced it, Lugo and Waka, they like teaching. They like talking about how they go about things. They've had guys in their past who have helped them, and they want to pass it on. So it's been really nice to see, very different to see too, which is good. And that's exactly what the Royals wanted when they brought them in.
On the position player side, it skews a lot younger. Yeah, there's a Sal Perez around. They brought in a Hunter Renfro. But this team, the engine of this team offensively, is all the young guys. That starts with Bobby Witt Jr., obviously, who's only 23, signs that big contract in the offseason, and an 11-year deal up to almost $300 million with more opt-outs and options than we can list in the show. Just off to a tremendous start here to his third season. Couple home runs already, couple stolen bases, hitting 300, playing good defense at shortstop. What has the Bobby Witt Jr. experience been like? I mean, obviously the numbers speak for themselves, but this is a guy that you've got to see day-to-day over these first couple seasons, and it seems like each successive step, he's finding more to unlock.
Yeah, it's really amazing just to watch him play. I always say, like, even if he goes 0-for-4, he's still going to impact the game in some way, whether it's, you know, running, whether it's sprinting down the line or making a really good play. I mean, there is not a lot of games where you don't see Bobby Witt Jr. impact the game. You know, yesterday I think he went 1-for-4 or 1-for-3, but his biggest contribution was a couple of really good defensive plays that got the Royals out of a jam. And I mean, he's just all over the place. And he's a rising superstar, which is something that, you know, the Royals haven't had in a while. And it's really exciting to see. They did a lot of work this off season to build a more competitive team around him, which led to the contract extension. Exactly what they, you know, what they had hoped for when they embarked on a really busy winter. So now it's just about keeping that, sustaining that, making sure that they're continuing to build around him with both offensive pieces and pitching pieces as well. So it's a fun time to have him on their team. Now you just hope that they can continue this success and continue to build around him to hopefully get back to contending.
Yeah, and some interesting pieces around him. Pascantino, who you mentioned earlier, and it sounds like he's taken on, you know, some of the leadership role on that position player side as well. Nelson Velasquez playing more regularly now, obviously a big bat there. MJ Melendez has this interesting thing going where obviously he's not a catcher anymore. He also can only hit at home. What's going on? He's like an MVP at home and hitless on the road. I know the actual answer is it's just small sample noise, but yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's something here early on.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess he just really likes hitting. He has to hit balls way farther at Kauffman Stadium for some reason. But no, it is a small sample size, but he's improved from last year. He's kind of continued the second half that he had into this year, and that's big. You know, we talk a lot about Bobby and Vinny and Salvador Perez, but MJ Melendez is a key bat for the Royals. He bats fifth. Like you said, he plays in the outfield, but if he's going, you get protection for Perez at the number four spot, and you've got a huge left-handed bat in Melendez. And so he's going to be really key for this offense to keep his success sustained, kind of lengthen the lineup a little bit. We talk a lot about the big boppers up top, but he's just as much a part of that group as anybody else.
And we'll see, which of these guys actually get in the lineup tonight against Kikuchi, who's a lefty and has been tough on lefties. Obviously, the Royals have too many of their key players who are left-handed. They're not going to sit them all. I'm curious. So Michael Massey came back on the weekend, a nice second base prospect there as well. I don't know if you know this, but Adam Frazier has, over the last couple of years, been a huge Blue Jay killer. Does the return of Michael Massey mean we might not have to see as much Adam Frazier this weekend? Like, is this Massey's job to run with now?
Well, yeah, I think he's going to get the majority of spots at second base, but you're also going to see Frazier go to the outfield a little bit too. You might see him at third base a little bit. Maybe it's a defensive replacement late in games, when he pinch hits. So, it's really interesting to see now over the past couple of days and moving forward how they're going to split up this time, because that was a big question when the Royals did sign Frazier was, hey, they do have a lefty second baseman. Why do they need another one? But they're going to rely a little bit more on Frazier's versatility, and he knows that he might not start as much with Massey back on the team, but he's going to be used in pinch hitter roles and those sort of things. Bring that veteran presence to those late inning moments that when the game's on the line. So we'll see how that all plays out. I'm very interested, especially today, to see how many lefties get in that lineup. You might be able to escape it.
Yeah, I would like that. I've seen too much Adam Frazier somehow the last couple of years. Before I let you go here, the one young player who's maybe not performing up to where they want him right now on the hitting side is Michael Garcia. Obviously good glove at third base, can run on the bases, but he's hitting .174, .223 on base right now. Is there any concern, that they're going to have to slide him down at the order? Are they going to let him stay at the top of the order as he figures this out?
Yeah, I asked about that Friday before the series opener against the Orioles, and the answers I got were it's a little bit too early. They they believe in his bat. They like what he brings at the top of the lineup, and he did show that in the first couple of games this season. I think he is one of their better leadoff candidates. It's just a matter of how long do they let him struggle up there before they have to make a change. The other problem is I don't really see many alternatives to that leadoff, to have in that leadoff spot. You could put Bobby up there. He really struggled with that last year. He loves hitting number two. It's hard to want to change that part of it. So there's not a ton of alternatives. And I do think the Royals believe in Garcia. He had a couple of really hard hit outs yesterday, which is, it's tough to see from a guy who's struggling. So we'll see if he can turn it around, but I can't imagine them going much longer before they have to make a change, especially if the rest of the offense can't start to pick it up a little bit.
Yeah, and it might not be tonight because Kikuchi is lefty and has a good pickoff move and stuff. But if he can get on base later in the series, you can run a little bit on the Toronto Blue Jays. So I'm sure they're looking at this as a series they'd like to see him get it going. Andy Rogers, thanks so much for taking the time out. Enjoy the series.
All right, thank you.
Andy Rogers of Royals.com, of MLB.com. So this series gets going tonight at 7:40. It's Dan and Buck on the call for you with Arden Zwelling, filling in for Hazel May as the additional reporter there. Ben Shulman and Chris LaRue with the call for you on the radio side. It is Yusei Kikuchi against Brady Singer tonight. The rest of the series will go Kevin Gausman against Michael Wacha, Yariel Rodriguez against Alec Marsh, and Jose Barrios against Cole Ragans in the 2 p.m. Thursday finale. We'll be off Thursday. There's a weird schedule quirk. The Leafs are obviously in the playoffs. It's an afternoon baseball game. So no JStock Plus Thursday, but you get double dose of me tomorrow here and on Blair and Barker. So Kikuchi Singer will be an interesting one tonight. I mentioned the Royals are pretty lefty heavy through the order. That they regularly play four, sometimes even five lefties. That'll get really interesting for, say, the Jose Barrios start. They stack lefties against him. He's been very nice against lefties and righties to start this year. It hasn't really mattered to Jose Barrios. But if you look back to last year, some of those lefty heavier lineups were the ones that could give him trouble at times. Is he so locked in that doesn't matter? We'll see on Thursday. Tonight, it'll be more of a question of which of these guys do the Royals sit down, or do they just play their guys and deal with the lefty-lefty matchup? We have seen teams try to keep their left-handed hitters away from Yusei Kikuchi because he has been very, very, very good to start the season, as has Brady Singer. We'll see how that goes tonight. Again, that one's at 7:40. Dan Buck and Arden, Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Blair and Barker will be coming up at 2 p.m. for you. They'll also have Jays Talk postgame. You can catch me pregame on Blue Jay Central tonight as well. Thanks to Julia Kreutz, to Annie Rogers, to Amit Mann, Lance Kennedy, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. The Jeff Merrick Show is coming up next. Fun weekend of Stanley Cup playoffs action underway. Less so if you're a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, as I am. But hey, it's the playoffs and you're a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. This is old hat for you. Jays Talk Plus, back tomorrow at 11 a.m.